some points from yesterday in terms of just some Yachloku points. Everyone is making progress for the Chazara. I didn't know whether it was necessary to have more questions for today. We were still working off yesterday's questions. Do you need more questions? Need more questions for tomorrow? Sorry?
Tomorrow.
Okay, so we'll be more questions for tomorrow. So essentially, just to add a few points to what we said yesterday. So first of all, as we mentioned yesterday, you get another perspective on things when you come back from the beginning again after you've seen more of the sigyas in between. So we mentioned yesterday that the Radbaz and the Ramban and a few others try to lay out all the principles in one place. So it's kedai to just reflect how it fits into what we've seen since then. So just to mention the Tshuvas HaRadbaz, where he lays down the principles, the six different policies. When do you do one, when do you do the other? So he writes as follows. Says that the first premise is, if you have a situation where one person is mochzar, so then what's the rule? Hamotzi mechavero v'rei. That's the first type of scenario. The second scenario you'll have is that it's not that one person is mochzar, but that the property is in the hands of a third party. And if that's the case, so what's the rule? Yehimunach. Then you'll have a situation, a third case, where the property is in the hands of neither of them, let's say. So then, if it is ikal amekum aladim ilsa, you'll do kol dalim gvar. If it's lekal amekum aladim ilsa, you'll do Shuda the Dayan. If it's Drarul the Mamona of the Shnehan, which, as we saw and we'll get into more, subject to a range of interpretations of what that means, so then the rule is that's the machlokis between Sumchas and Chacham. That's where Sumchas says Yachloku, and Chachamim will say, in other words, we know that Yachloku, sometimes everyone agrees to, and the idea that Sumchas is associated with Yachloku, Mamun Amut Basafik Yachloku. So we know that clearly he's not the only one who ever says Yachloku. And at the same time, he certainly acknowledges that there are times when you would say Hamotzi Mechavero Olavarai. That it's not going to be the case that if somebody's going to come up to you and say, wow, I like your shirt, so then Bezin will say, okay, now, it's Mamun Amut HaBasafek, so according to some of us, we have to split the shirt. He's going to agree that there's a certain threshold of relationship where you're going to have in order for it to be considered a safek. So there, apparently, the issue is, the way the Radbaz formulates that if there's drawer of Mamona, sounds like he probably means like the Rishonim who say that if there is an involvement on both parties, if there's a shaychus to both parties, although he doesn't say explicitly. So then we'll say, all right, once we can establish a shaychus to both parties, but it's still technically speaking in the hands of one of them, to go on hamachlof par b'chamor, so then we'll say, that's the machlokas. Rabbanan will say, hamotzi mechavero l'varaya, and Sulfus will say, yachloku. Then the sixth case brings us to our Mishnah, that if there is Otsin, if the two parties are both holding on to it, so then we'll say Yachloku. So in his understanding, those are the six gradations, and just having discussed them, and discussed Jarad Mamona, and discussed Ikol Mekum of the Milsa, etc., it's particularly meaningful then to consider what he means by breaking things down along those lines. Point I also meant to make yesterday, but didn't get around to it, is there is a question that Rishonim discussed, which seems a little bit tangential, but I think it's worthy of attention, is why it is that the Masechta is organized the way it is, that why is it that we start with Shnai Mochzen as opposed to Eilu Metzias.
We're in this year, we're machmer for both, so we're doing both prakim at the same time. But one could make the case that you should start with Eilu Metzias, because the whole premise of this first Mishnah is two people are laying claim to a Metziah. So that only makes sense if there is such a concept that you can sometimes keep a Metziah. So shouldn't we rather be told first Eilu Metziah Shalov Eilu Chayav Lahachris? And then the second parak we should discuss Shnei Mochus and Batalas. Now there are some Rishonim who ask that question, such as the Ran and others. While there are other Rishonim who we know Beferish are not bothered by that question. How do we know they're not bothered by that question? It's not only they don't ask it, because then, you know, we wouldn't necessarily know they're not bothered. Maybe for some reason it's not printed or they didn't come up to it. But they ask other questions in a way that explicitly is not worried about this question. What am I talking about? Talking about Tosfos in the beginning of the Masechta. So Tosfos asks why Bava Metzia starts the way it does, working off the assumption that all of Nezikin is one Masechta. That if we say that all of Nezikin is one, and then there's a whole discussion, does that mean all of what we call Seder Nezikin, or does it mean the three Bavas broken up into first, middle, and third, Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, and Bava Basra? So if they're all one Masechta, so then if we assume things should be sequential within one Masechta, so then that's a question to be asked. That's a Tosfos over here on Beis Amud Aleph. Right, they ask the question that way. First Tosfos. So that seems like you're only bothered by the order if you believe Nezikin is all one Masechta. But Eilu Metzias and Shnei Mochusim are definitely in one Masechta. So Tosfos' question is asked in a way that shows that Davka not curious as to why that ordering is the way it is. So some Rishonim are bothered by it, and some Rishonim are explicitly not bothered by it. So what we wanted to suggest to that question is that the premise of the question is that Yachloku is a prat in Eilu Metzias. And what we wanted to suggest is really it's the opposite, that Yachloku goes to the core of how you assess conflicts between people in terms of monetary claims. And therefore, once you can figure out these basic Yesodistic Svaras, so then the rules of Metzia V'Aveda flow from that, or flow within that. So the premise of these Rishonim, that Yachloku is a prat within Aveda, we can really say the opposite, that Aveda and Metzia is a prat within Yachloku, because Yachloku is not just local Yachloku, but it is a step one to this broad question of how do we figure out how to adjudicate these disputes. Hi.
Can you just say, based on Tosfos, that the reason why we started out with Yachloku is just because the continuation from Bava Kama?
Yeah, for sure.
So, meaning that's a valid reason.
Yeah, and I think that's a good answer too. But I think you could say, even in a more central way, that this is a very appropriate way to start the Masechta. I think we also mentioned the first time around that there are some who note the grouping of the Masechtas. So Bava Kama has to do with monetary claims that come from some type of Aveira, that come from Nezikin, that come from Gzeil and Geneva, come from Chavala, that comes from some offensive act. And Bava Metzia has to do with monetary issues that don't necessarily emanate from some type of offense, but are disputes along more peaceful areas. So within that framework, one could say that the mission of Yachloku is one of the most Yesodistic concepts in all of monetary disputes. So that's what we wanted to suggest, that this is step one. This is Yesod HaYesodos. And then Metzia V'Aveda, that comes out of that. That comes out of working off such principles. David,
you have a question? Well, if you're saying it teaches like all the ways how to judge like cases of money and stuff like that, why wouldn't you put it at the beginning of Bava Kama?
So if you want to say that Bava Kama is addressing a different type of monetary issues, that they're rooted in averos, or they're rooted in offensive acts, such as Nezikin, which is basically the theory, is basically the unifying element of all of Bava Kama, So we've accounted the first half is about Nezikin, the end part is about Gzela and Geneva, and Hachovel is in the middle of that. So all of the Masechta is essentially about things that emanate from Averus or offensive acts. So Bar Metzia is a different category. It doesn't premise itself on those types of offenses, but it has to do with legitimate disputes and conflicts and claims. So Aveda and Metzia, especially, again, seeing this in the framework of how we've been discussing it, you really benefit from the synergy of seeing everything at the same time and being able to come back and discuss things once we've seen certain principles. So we're talking about in Eilu Metzias, about Yeish and the like, and we've struggled a little bit with just how fair is it Yeish, how fair a principle is Yeish, and the idea that somebody can lose his right to get his property back and the finder all of a sudden has the right to keep it. And we talked a little bit about Vesisa Yashar Bahatov. So essentially, what is Aveda and Metzia? It's an area where you have two people who have some type of claim to an item. The loser, lowercase l, he originally owned it and he lost it. The finder found something which he doesn't know who it belongs to or when he can decide that it's his. So there's essentially a conflict of rights between two people who are both legitimate players, who don't have any claims against each other of any type of offense. So it actually works out very well that the whole concept of Metzia v'Aveda, separate from the fact that there's a specific mitzvah in the Torah of Hashavas Aveda, but the question of simply who gets to keep something when property is lost or property is found is really a detail of Yachloku, is a detail of these opening comments in the Masechta of how do we address conflicts between two people in the absence of any claim of offense. So it makes sense. We'll start first with the Echaloku, which goes to the core of these svaras, and then we'll go to Hachas Metzia v'Aveda and the like. So also, just to follow up on something Jonathan mentioned. So Jonathan mentioned yesterday that in our Chazara, we were leaving out a Nas Imperio. So he's right, shouldn't leave out a Nas Imperio. But it was actually at a slightly different point that we didn't actually get to, but it was related. We talked yesterday about Tosus and the Rush, and if there's a difference between them. They say something similar, but it may be a difference between how they say it. And we touched upon yesterday whether the difference was significant. That Tosus says that when it comes to Manashlishi, so we don't say Yachloku. Manashlishi, again, being the case where you have two parties who ask a third party to watch their money. Reuven and Shimon ask Levi to watch their money. Reuven gives $200, Shimon gives $100, and then they later on dispute who gave the $200. So there's a dispute over that last $100. So the din is Yehei Munach. So Tosu says that essentially that could have been Yachloku, that has to share a commonality with Shnei Melachos and Betalos because the Gemara compares them. So what's the commonality? Well, it really is Ochsin, because the Shomer is holding it on their behalf. So it's a case of Ochsin, but it's different because Ein Chaluka Yechol Lios Emes. And the Rush sounds like he's saying something very similar, but says it a little bit differently, and we talked about yesterday whether that difference was significant, because the Rush says it was known to the Shomer at the time that it wasn't actually 50-50. So Tosus just says it's not MS, even though theoretically you could transfer the property when it's elsewhere, that's very unlikely to happen. And the Rush doesn't say it that way. The Rush emphasizes the fact that it was known to this party beforehand. So we spoke yesterday about whether there's a difference between the two in terms of does it just have to be theoretically MS so we can hang our hat on that as a Tliya? Or is it that we have to hope that, or at least have the theoretical possibility, that this achiza represents some historical reality? And in the case of this Manashlishi, the Shomer knows that it doesn't represent the historical reality. He knows that once upon a time, one person came with 200 and one person came with 100. So there was another point that was relevant to the Rush, that this is where the Nas Imperio came in. That there are those who ask, the Tumim and others, they ask on the Rush that there's a psak in the Shulchan Aruch that seems to contradict this. Because the Shulchan Aruch says that if you have a mocher, who is going to sell something to somebody. And there are two people who both claim that they negotiated with this mocher and they got the sale to them. So, under those circumstances, under those circumstances, you have to split it. Say yachlok. So they ask, the Tumim and others ask, so isn't this basically the Rush's situation? That here, the Mocher knows it wasn't both of them. He, so to speak, is holding it on behalf of these two parties at the moment. And we're saying, Yechloku. So what's Pshat? So the Ktsos says that the difference is that any time there's no Rami, we say Yechloku. That's really the issue here. I want to come back to that point in a second, but that's really the key point. So in the case of the Pikado, we know one guy is lying. But in the case of the Mocher,
maybe nobody's lying.
Maybe they both think legitimately that they each owned. So that enough. That already is enough for a difference.
But we're not saying it's them in the rush, right?
That the Rush might agree with this. Maybe the Rush is talking about his rule when there is a pikadon. So if both of them are claiming the 200, so one of them is definitely lying. But in the case of the Mocher, they're both claiming to be the one who got the deal. So it's not necessarily the case that one is lying. Maybe they both legitimately thought from the conversation that they walked away to win. So in such a case, so says, you can say Yachloku, because the only thing we're concerned about, which is really what Tosfos had said also maybe, is that there shouldn't be a Rami. So since there's not necessarily a Rami here, we can say Yachloku. The point that Nassim Perio made is that the key difference between the two cases is that it's easier for this Mocher to split it. It's more reasonable for this Mocher to split it because no one will lose out if he splits it. If he doesn't split it, and we say, hey, Munach, nobody wins. Nobody's going to get the property that they want to buy. The seller's not going to be able to sell it. It's lose, lose, lose. If he splits it, so then each one will pay half price and will keep half their money, and the seller gets to sell it. So it's either win, 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 or lose, lose, lose. So in the case of the seller, it makes sense for him to split it and go for the win-win-win rather than go for the hey-munach, which would be lose-lose-lose. The Stipler had also talked about this, and he said in a similar sense that the mocher, even though he's not a bezdin, this is somewhere in between bezdin and a shomer, and that because he doesn't have the responsibilities of a shomer, he is more flexible that he can make somewhat of a pshara. He doesn't have the authority of the bezdin, but he also doesn't have the responsibility of a shomer. The shomer really is not in a position to make up shara because he took on a prize to watch this. So what right does he have to say, well, I don't remember who owns it, so therefore I'll split it between the two of you. But the seller does perhaps have a little more latitude to do that because he doesn't have that kind of authority. Right?
I mean, it's hard that the shomer doesn't have that responsibility, but I mean, if you say that that's the din, so I mean that becomes part of his achrayas. That is to say that if we say that he's doing the yechluk on his own, then he can't do it because he's a shomer and he has responsibility to both of the people. But if you say that the din in that case would be yechluku, so that's not a contradiction to his responsibility.
To the shomer, if you would say that, the question is why do we not come on to that? Why do we assume that that's not the right policy of thing? So because it wouldn't be consistent with fairness, and it's not something that's within his control to do, so it comes out that that's not going to be our favorite policy. You're right that if the halacha was, it could have been circled the other way, but if the halacha were to say that we're convinced that this is the right approach for the shomer, so then it would have been a legitimate approach for him to take, and it would have been within his uprights. But since we're working from the ground up, we've got to figure out what the appropriate policy is, and it doesn't seem to be indicated in the case of the shomer, so then we can't say he's fulfilling his responsibility that way.
It would only be circular, I think, the other way, that if we could establish for some reason that that is the din, so it's legitimate then for the shomer to avail himself of that din. But if that's not the premise, and that's what the Rishonim were explaining why it's not, so then we're not going to necessarily come on to that. Another point I wanted to clarify a little bit. We spoke yesterday about whether Yachloku is a pshara or a psak, let's say. And we mentioned the very likely possibility that there's more than one kind of Yachloku and that it could be both. So we should also mention that there are really two ways of framing the question, which tend to work off the same sources and probably should be mentioned separately. Now, one is, do you see it as a psak or as a pshara? The other way is, even if you say that it's a psak according to everybody, but what's the nature of a psak? Is it a psak of vados? That essentially the Beis Din is saying, because of each one's achiza, we are claiming through the mechanism of vadai that each one actually owns half of it? Or are we saying, really, we have no clue? But because of the safek, the psak of Beis Din is, you should split it. A psak that's motivated by a safek in Beis Din. And what would the difference be? Again, if you say it's vados, it doesn't mean that they really think this is for sure the case. It means that they're passing with that type of terminology and that type of effect. And that flows from the issues we spoke about yesterday also, about just how significant is the achiza that each party has. So coming out from that, there are some nafkaminas that the Sfarim talk about. So for example, if you want to say it's a suffix, so let's say one party has a different edge. So for example, what if one party was the Marikama, was the original owner of the Anja, which as we've discussed more since then, again, Marikama is a weak type of chazaka. It's not the same thing as a Mukhzak who's holding onto it now. It's a historical fact that has a little bit of relevance, but not a lot. But if this is all about a suffix, so then maybe Marikama plays a role too, and that will tilt things. Or also the point that the Ramban maintains, that if you have a Bari Vashema, so even if Bari Vashema is also not such a powerful force in general, but if this whole approach is based on suffix, so maybe Bari Vashema is going to be relevant. There is a essay about this in the Kontrase Shiurim of Rav Guspin, and he has a way of framing it that goes as follows, that essentially, if you assume, like Rav Eitan, and then Tosfos on Daf Beis, and the other Rishonim, that we need oxen in order to say Afloku, so what's the nature of that statement? What's the nature of the requirement of Ochsen? Is it that once they're both Ochsen, so that puts each one on the table, and now it's a suffix between the two of them? So we need some level of involvement in order for it to be a suffix, and Ochsen represents that threshold? Or is it, as other Rishonim said, that each one holding it gives them some type of muhzok status, and that's why we now have a motzi mechaber olav araya on the other one vis-a-vis that half, and that's why we end up splitting. So essentially that correlates to this question, are we splitting it as a suffix, and the suffix exists because each one has established some level of connection, or is it that each one gets their connection because they're holding on to it, and now they're a muhzok? So because of Otsu Mechaber and Lohariah, neither one has a proof that they own the whole thing. So as a straight-out sack of Vados, essentially, the guys in the room end up splitting. The question also comes up of just how much weight we're putting on the whole holding onto it component. So what does it mean, holding onto it? It emerges from the Gemara and Dav Zayin, a pretty significant point, that the Olsen of our Mishnah is not the ultimate in Achizah, that there is a better Achizah that exists, and that the Gemara on Daf Zayin talks about Shnayim Adukim Vitalis.
If you have both parties are actually holding it in such a way that there is significant real estate in their fingers.
So that apparently gives them even more of a claim.
And then the Gemara has to explain what our Mishnah is talking about, that it wasn't talking about that.
So apparently our Mishnah is talking about they're holding the edges. They just have a very token lift on this object. So then we say straight out Yachloku. But if they're holding it in such a way that they have some significant material within their hands, so then that material is theirs. And the Yachloku is on the rest that they're not actually holding. Each one gets what's actually under his hands, and Yachloku on the rest. But there is a Machlokus Rishonim, just what we mean about Yachloku on the rest, because the right, because the Gemara says that they Yachloku Beshrua on the rest. So Tosfos says, take out the word rest, that the Gersa should be amended, and that really this is the Yachloku on the whole thing, and they should do a Shua on everything. And the Rambam and a few other Rishonim say no, that the Shua is only on the part in the middle. In other words, the part that's actually under their hands, they really get straight out, they don't even need a Shua. And the Shua is only on the area that's not being covered by either hand. And the Rambam says, because of Gilgul Shua, which means once you have a Shua on the table, you can then go on to other things and add other Shuas to it. So because of Gilgul Shua, you make a Shua on everything. But the key obligation, the Shua, is just on the area in between the hands. And then just to make one more Yachloku related point, so we also discussed the question of whether or not Shaloya Hey Ramai, whether they were worried not to reward Ramai, or not to benefit a Ramai, and Chaluki, Cholios Emes, are those the same thing or not? Are those the same type of consideration? So one could say they're the same. They tend to come from the same point, that it's impossible for it to accurately be the case that they both have it, could also be because one person is definitely lying because their claims are mutually exclusive. But they're not necessarily the same. So there's a lot of discussion about that. So what happens, for example, in a situation where they have mutually exclusive claims, but they might genuinely just be in disagreement about who's right. So you could easily have scenarios where Chalukah yashuli osemes, but there isn't a Rama. Or, as we discussed yesterday, you could have the inverse, with ani araktia. So Rashi says that they both claim to have sewed it, to have created the garment, so then it's impossible for it to be MS, and they don't split it, they don't say achloku. And Tosfos says, even there you can split it. So why can you split it there? We mentioned the possibility that even though somebody's definitely lying, it's still Chaluk Yicholios Emes. It's still conceivably possible that they both picked it up at the same time, even though the claims they're using, somebody is definitely lying. So part of the question is, why do you care? When they say there's a Ramai, what's bothering us? Is it that we don't want to do Yachloku because we know we can't be Emes because of the Ramai, which would essentially make the two the same? Or, no, it's not just that it can't be Emes, because we can handle that. Can handle making a pshar in a situation where it may not be honest. But we don't want to reward a rabbi. And if Beis Din is willing to say, all right, because you're making a false claim, now we'll give you half of the item, whichever one is the rabbi. So not only is it imposing a ruling which doesn't reflect historical truth, but they are rewarding Ramos, and maybe that's not in Bezdin's role, maybe that's not appropriate for Bezdin to be rewarding Ramos. So in light of that, so again, now kind of weaving things that we mentioned later with things we mentioned earlier, so just to kind of pull back on a lot of the points you mentioned today and yesterday, so the machlokus between Rebbeinu Tam and the Riva and the whole Reed team, that according to Rebbeinu Tam, you need Ofsin, and according to the Riva, you don't need Ofsin, you just need no Ramai. But then the Riva goes on to say this fascinating point, that, however, I don't require Ochsin in general. But if there is Ochsin, so then you could say Yachloku even if there was a Rambam. So how do you explain those two possibilities? So you could say that maybe one's a pshara and one's not a pshara. You could say that when there's no Rami, then even if there's no Olsen, we can say a pshara, okay, you two are fighting over it, so we'll split it as a pshara, and we don't even require Olsen, which is consistent, by the way, with the Rambam. Many assume that the Rambam agrees with the Riva, because the Rambam doesn't require Olsen. He says that even two people standing around a pile are getting a flow through. And the assumption is that that's a pshara. Okay, we can make a pshara in that case as long as we have no Rami. That's all we care about. There should be no Rami. But the case in the second scenario, where there is a Rami, so why is it that the Riva will allow that to be split because of Ochsin? So maybe because Ochsin gives you a genuine claim, so now it's not a pshara, it's just we're giving it to each one because it's mashatachas yado. And therefore that we can do even regardless of the Rami consideration. Another spin on that machlokas is that maybe we're worried that Beis Din should not facilitate a Rami. And therefore, maybe the question is, who is creating the Yachloku? Is the Yachloku happening in of itself because it automatically emanates from the situation? Or is Beis Din imposing the Yachloku? So perhaps you could say that also depends on the circumstances. That if you have Ochsin, the two parties are holding on to it, so then the Yachloku automatically springs out of the situation. But if you don't have Olsen, and we say Yachloku anyway, it's because Beis Din is imposing. So not wanting to help a Rami means Beis Din cannot do something that will help the Rami. So when you don't have Olsen and it's Beis Din doing it, so it's not right for them to do it, and one's a Rami. But when you have the two parties Olsen, so then, the fact that they split it, it's not because Beis Din made them split it. But that was the automatic consequence of the fact that they're both holding on to it, and therefore it's not a concern of Ramos, because even if the Rami is benefiting, it's not because Beis Din is doing anything. So those are two related but different ways of looking at the Riva's two levels of Yachlok. In other words, whether it's a Pshara or a Vados, or whether it's an active medicine or whether it happens automatically, two different ways to explain that distinction. Okay, everyone doing well so far? All right, so we have on our agenda for tomorrow, that is, let's try to get into certainly Koldel Mivar, that's what we'll start with, and probably other types also, Shuda, Nehemina, and the like, and maybe we'll get to do Jarad Ramona.